And we are joined now, and I apologize because there's absolutely no way that you're going to be able to follow an entire chorus of kids singing holiday songs, but Anna Richards joins us now from the Chapel Hill Carrboro NAACP. How are you?
I'm good. Pretty intimidated. They were adorable.
I know. They were great.
The studio,
yeah.
And they were great.
Yeah.
Great.
But I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I wish I had a great big fat Christmas present to talk about, but I got the president's big fat tax cut that I'd like to talk about today.
Yeah.
The Chapel Hill Carrboro branch is organizing an informational forum on the Tax Cut and Jobs Act for next Tuesday, a week from today, December 12th at the Chapel Hill Library from 6:30 to 8 p.m. At the forum, we're going to have an expert, a panel of experts bringing us the most up-to-date information available on the bill, as well as strategies going forward. So, you know, the really sham story on this bill has resulted in a lot of us just not being aware of what's really in the bill and how it's going to impact us. So we've got Samuel Gunter, who's the Director of Policy and Advocacy for North Carolina Housing Coalition, Alexandra Ciorda, who's Director of Budget and Tax for North Carolina Justice Center, and then Alan Fryer, who is Director of Worker Rights for North Carolina Justice Center, on our panel. And these folks are really experts in terms of policy and how it's going to impact us. You know, just some of the numbers, if you think about these numbers, it's just shocking. The top 1% on average will receive a $5,050 tax cut, and the bottom 60% will on average receive a $290 tax increase. In this.
Which bill are you looking at there?
I'm looking at the Senate's bill.
The interesting thing with this is, I mean, I'm teaching American government at Durham Tech, and we were just talking about Congress like a week and a half ago. And we were talking about it in the context of this tax bill, because you got the House passing their bill, you got the Senate passing their bill, and neither one of those bills are actually going to see the light of day, because now they go into a conference committee and they're going to have to try to hash out the differences between the two and come up with some third bill that we don't even know what it is yet, that's going to then have to go back and get a vote from both houses. So there's a whole bunch of steps left before anything final happens.
There are, but I think there are some things that haven't even been discussed, and that primarily is getting the corporate tax rate down to 20%. And if you look at that, that is what is really adding to the deficit, that reduction in revenue. And so they're having to find the money to pay for that, to even keep it within this, you know, the most friendly estimate, say a half a trillion, and they go as high as $2 trillion deficit add. So things, graduate students, increase taxes for them by roughly 400%. You know, look at something that we don't think about, but even university endowment income is going to be taxed at 1.4%.
The graduate student thing is significant. I know I was a graduate student myself, and if I had to pay taxes on the tuition waiver that I got, because when you're a graduate student, at least in my experience in the PhD program, you get tuition. If you get any kind of aid package at all, you get a tuition waiver and you get a stipend, which is usually extremely small. But that's the money that you get, is the stipend. The tuition waiver, you don't ever actually see that money. It's just you sign a paper and you don't have to pay tuition. You're paying taxes on that small stipend that you get. If you're paying taxes on the tuition waiver as well, that money's got to come out of that tiny little stipend, and you don't have very much to begin with.
Exactly. So you know, there's been a couple of examples in terms of what the impact would be in the House bill. So if you were a graduate student and you had, let's say, a $30,000 living stipend that you got and a tuition waiver at a private school, let's say $50,000, today you're paying taxes on that $30,000 stipend. Under this tax bill, you'd be paying taxes on $80,000 because the tuition would be rolled into your tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
So significant impact. And, you know, as a college town, I think both that tax on research, that a lot of these graduate students do, and they work, you know, they grade papers, they teach classes. And the other part of it is a lot of the cost, if you think overall, of how do you keep tuition down, it's through endowments. And now to turn around and at the same time tax that endowment income. So universities get endowments, they invest the money, and it would also end deductibility for donations for seat licenses at sporting events. So a lot of universities give seat licenses, and that would be a deduction today that goes away. So
I don't even know what the impact of that would be.
Well, you know, I think these ways of, you know, the impact of education and affordable education, we've already seen tuition rising faster than inflation for decades, and to have these ways of generating revenue that colleges use, hopefully, ostensibly, to slow down that pace of inflation, to have those things taxed.
Yeah.
It ain't good.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, crunching numbers exactly what the impact will be.
We're speaking with Anna Richards, Chapel Hill Carborough, NAACP. Chapel Hill Carborough, NAACP.wordpress.com is their website, or just Google Chapel Hill NAACP. It'll come right up. And a reminder, we're talking about tax reform because we've got this this meeting coming up next week, Tuesday. Remind me again, 6:30 to 8?
Tuesday.
At the library?
The 12th.
Yep.
6:30 to 8 at the Chapel Hill Public Library.
And that's a forum on tax reform. And
it's a forum, informational forum on the tax cut, so-called, and Jobs Act. There have been some great articles. There was one in the new NNO on November 30th about how the plan could impact affordable housing development in our area, because now it would eliminate the tax-exempt status for bonds that private investors use to build affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And we haven't even talked about the potential impact to health insurance.
Right.
And already you're hearing talk that, well, this is going to really increase the deficit, so we're going to have to curb spending.
Right.
At a time where we're...
Which then means Social Security, Medicare,
Medicaid,
that's probably going to come up next
probably,
year if they pass anything,
which,
right?
By the way, has been something that some people in Congress have wanted to do for a long time.
Right. So we got to let you go in a second. I do want to change the subject here just for a second to get your thoughts on this. Reverend William Barber, who was the head of the state chapter, now is heading up this national anti-poverty campaign. Just reported earlier this week, and I'm sure you know this already, that he's launching a national effort to sort of take the Moral Monday movement and go national with
right.
it, with this idea of a moral revival is what
yes.
he's calling it now.
Yes.
I love that idea because I know, and I know you think the same thing, and everyone out there who's listening, I know there's a sizable percentage of
right.
our listeners who are thinking the same way. We look out in the world today, and we look at the state of affairs. We look at things as they are. And this is 2016, 2017, and all of these are trends that have been building up for months, years, decades, centuries. This country needs a moral revival.
I would say.
And this is the gay guy saying this,
yes.
right? Like, we need a moral revival, but not the sort of not what we associate with the moral revival from like the Pat Roberts and Jerry Falwell moral majority Christian. I mean a real moral revival, like actual morality. We need to get back to that. And I think Reverend Barber is doing the right thing.
I'm excited about his campaign because a lot of these issues can't be swept under the rug in terms of are they moral or not.
Mm-hmm.
Not renewing CHIP, how can that be moral? Mm-hmm. Where is your moral conscience of taking health care away from sick children?
Yeah. It's the most fundamental moral principle. It's kindness and inclusion and love and what you do to the least of these, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we hopefully bring us back to what we say are a core set of values. And unfortunately, what many in the religious right have done have said, well, we'll take the child molester. We'll take somebody who, is an adulteress. We'll take the person who lies because we agree with the policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that policy, again, is a very narrow policy on a couple of issues.
And
so,
we need to look in the mirror on that as well.
We do.
We've got our own. But I think that's exactly
right.
Well,
and I'm not suggesting that there be a blind eye on either side.
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely. You look eyes wide open on both sides.
Yep. And just keep reminding ourselves of that all the time.
Yep.
Chapel Hill Carborough, NAACP.wordpress.com is the website. Come out to the library next week, Tuesday, the 12th, 6:30 to 8 for that forum on tax reform. We'll know more about where things stand 7 days from now as that joint committee continues to meet. Honor Richards, thank you so much.
Thank you.